podcast is brought to you by the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group in London and with the kind permission of the Parkinson's UK charity. Welcome to Parkinson's Life Raft. Parkinson's Life Raft is designed to help you, whether you have Parkinson's or, like me, you care for someone who does. And whether you're having a good day or a bad one, we hope you'll feel connected to others who are in the same boat. Each podcast will invite a person or some people to give us a different perspective on living with Parkinson's. My name's Vivian Goldstein, and I'm a member of the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group here in London. My husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's about 10 years ago. I then discovered the support group, and I've been an active member ever since. In this episode, I'm offering you something slightly different. Recently, Professor David Dexter came to talk to the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group, and we all knew it was going to be really interesting, so we recorded it for your listening pleasure and for your information. Professor Dexter is an Associate Research Director at Parkinson's UK and a Professor of Neuropharmacology at Imperial College London. Over the last 3 years, he has managed funding strategy for the largest patient-led charity for Parkinson's in Europe, bringing a fresh, holistic approach to grants and research funding from drug discovery to late-stage clinical trials. Professor Dexter came to talk to us about research and, in particular, about the Parkinson's UK Brain Bank. It is the world's only brain bank solely dedicated to Parkinson's research. I hope you find this as fascinating as we all did in person.
People say to me, you know, what's it like doing research? And I say, well, it's like doing a jigsaw puzzle, but your friend hasn't given you the lid with the picture on. So it makes it a lot more difficult. So who's done jigsaw puzzles? Yeah, yeah. So what do? You start doing the boring straight edges, really what we were doing, you know, way back in 1985. So when I started, this jigsaw puzzle would be the blank table. So we knew nothing about why the cells in the brains of people with Parkinson's were actually dying. We knew that Lewy bodies were there. We knew that dopamine cells were dying, and we had L-DOPA, and that's all we had. So for years, we've been doing the slow research of trying to find out what is causing the brain cells to actually die. And as you'll see on this handout, that some of the culprits we've actually been able to name. And this is all work that was being done on the donated human brains, because animals don't get Parkinson's. So all of this has been really due to work on donated brains from people who've had Parkinson's and from healthy volunteers as well. So you may have recognised some of the culprits on this page. You know, you've got things like bad proteins. You know, in Parkinson's, it's a protein called alpha-synuclein. And this misbehaves because it misfolds and it clogs up the cells and it stops them functioning normally. And so that triggers one of the second mechanisms about why cells die. And you've probably heard about mitochondria. You know, they're like the batteries inside the cell. So they produce the energy that the cells need to function. And unfortunately, the batteries in people with Parkinson's are not fully functioning. You know, it's like when you've got those rechargeable ones and you've recharged them a few times, but then they start to fade a little bit and they don't recharge enough. And so that's what's happening in Parkinson's. The mitochondria aren't producing enough energy. And the cells need energy to survive. So there's lots of other processes on here. So what we're starting to get is a clearer picture about what causes Parkinson's. And it's just like the jigsaw puzzle. You know, once you've done the straight edges and you start to put down the picture in the middle, you know, once you know that it is a bowl of fruit and you know the basic structure of the bowl and what type of fruit's in it, you can put the pieces down quicker. And that's the exciting time that we are at the moment, is that we know quite a lot of the picture, so we're putting down the pieces faster. So it's an exciting time. We don't know the whole picture, but we know enough of the picture to actually start aiming drugs at those things what we call targets like the bad proteins, like trying to restore the energy functions of mitochondria. So we've got quite a lot of targets that we're actually aiming drugs at. So, you know, Parkinson's UK has been going since, was it 1969? And that's when it started to fund research. And so it's continued to fund research, but also it's got the care and support angle to it as well, which is very important. So interestingly, in the last 3 years, Parkinson's UK funded more research into Parkinson's than the UK government. And that is a bit of a sad fact, but it's a good fact that Parkinson's UK is generating enough money to put money into research. And without that money, we wouldn't really be in the position where we are today. So all of these pieces in this jigsaw puzzle, Parkinson's UK money has really contributed to their discovery. Probably 50%, 60% of them, it was triggered by Parkinson's UK research. In the other 40 to 50%, you know, we've played still a major role in their discovery. So if you stood out of outside Waitrose on a wet day shaking your can, or if a family member has left something in their will, or you've done a walk for Parkinson's, you've actually contributed to these fantastic discoveries. So any money that anybody's raised contributes to that research. So everybody's played a fantastic role, and everybody should be congratulated on that, really. So we're at this interesting time. So this little dartboard scheme tells you all of the drugs that are currently in clinical trial. So amazingly, there are 175 drugs currently being tested in trials around the world. Many of them are being run in the UK. So that's a lot. So we're not talking about drugs coming in the next 5 years. We're not talking about drugs coming in the next 10 years. Drugs are available now for people to test. So the drugs in the top part of this dartboard, or what we call drugs which are potential of slowing Parkinson's down. So the ones in the lower part of the dartboard are the ones that are treating symptoms. So these just aren't treating movement problems. They're there to also treat anxiety, depression, constipation. So there is something that's being tested at the moment for all of the different symptoms. So again, this is a very positive sign. And you can see it is just like a dartboard. The closer it gets to the centre, they're what we call phase three trials. The closer it gets to phase three is the closer it could be approved for general use. And as you can see, there are quite a lot of drugs in that phase three circle right in the middle. So last year, 2022, there were only three drugs in phase three. Whereas now, we've got, seven drugs now, and an eighth one is going to be added to that soon. So again, that is more than 100% increase in the number of drugs which are getting to those close stages where they move on to actually, you know, your neurologist or your Parkinson's nurse can actually prescribe. So how many people have actually taken part in a clinical trial? So we've got a few hands up here. So just a little bit of explanation, because, you know, we are looking for people to actually enter clinical trials to test those drugs. So a lot of the work is done in what we call the preclinical phase. So that is to test whether the drug is effective in, say, animal models of Parkinson's, or to test whether they're free from toxic side effects. So before a drug gets any close to a patient, you know, they're tested and tested and tested to try and prove that they are as safe as possible. So the first phase is what we call first-in-man studies. So these are small studies. They're generally done in healthy volunteers initially. So when I was a student doing my PhD, I would volunteer for these clinical testing to earn a little bit more money. So they'll actually test these drugs, they'll escalate the dose and see whether there's any side effects. So even before that they get to somebody with Parkinson's, they've been tested in people to try and prove that they're safe. So then the next phase one part is where they start to test them in small groups of people with Parkinson's. And again, that phase one study is all about safety. So all the way through trials, the focus of every drug trial is about patient safety. So, you know, they monitor, through the whole of the journey. And how frequently do you see your neurologist? Do you see them every 2 or 3 months? How many people? Whereas if you're part of a trial, that's how frequently you would see a neurologist or a Parkinson's nurse. So there is benefits to being on a trial, apart from also, you know, being one of these, you know, people that could help the discovery of a drug that slows Parkinson's. So when we get into phase two, that's when they're starting to test the efficacy. Does it actually slow Parkinson's, or does it treat anxiety in Parkinson's, or does it treat depression in Parkinson's? Yeah, so that is where we're looking to see whether it's effective or not. So it's a small group in phase two. It's still quite relatively large, so you can see how many people we need in the studies if we are going to test multiple drugs. So then it gets to phase three. This is numbers here are a little bit large, but as we go up the phases, you know, we're going into phase three. So we've just launched a joint initiative with Cure Parkinson's to actually fund a trial of a drug called Ambroxol, and that will be going into almost 500 people. So we need a lot of people to volunteer. And are we getting enough people to volunteer? Sadly, we're not. And the problem is that, you know, if we don't get enough people to volunteer, then the trials close early and we basically wasted, you know, can be, you know, 5 or 6 million in a phase two study. So, you know, who are they looking for? You know, who can volunteer? Basically, anybody at any stage of Parkinson's, there is a trial for them at the moment. So some trials are looking for people who are newly diagnosed, and are not on medication yet. Some people, you know, some trials are looking for people who are recently diagnosed and are stable on their medication, whether it's L-DOPA or a dopamine agonist. Other trials are looking for people who are more advanced, so you've been treated with L-DOPA or dopamine agonist, but you're experiencing side effects, like the tablets are wearing off before your next dose, or you're getting abnormal movements, which are called dyskinesias. So also there are clinical trials testing drugs for anxiety, depression, and many people that who have Parkinson's do experience those. So there is something for everybody to contribute with the clinical trials. So how can you find out? So one way, there's a leaflet here we've got, getting involved in research. So also there's what's called the Research Support Network. Anybody a member of the Research Support Network? So the RSN is basically, if you're interested in hearing about research, what's going on in research and actually contributing to shaping research, the RSN is a very good way of doing that. So we've got almost 9,000 people who are signed up to the RSN. So they'll get regular emails about what's going on in research. You know, what are the breaking news in research? You know, you may have heard on the news about the guy who had the spinal implants. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we commented on that and we're featured in several different publications and things. Mm-hmm. So all of that is covered in the news articles that come out in the Research Support Network. You know, you're told about events that are taking place. So we'll be having an event next year, which is called ParkCon. So this is a conference that will be organised by people with Parkinson's for people with Parkinson's. So, you know, we'll have a steering committee that will be set up for that. We did run ParkCon a couple of years ago, and because it was mainly online, you know, we had over 2,000 people joining that. So some people were, you know, dialing in from Canada. So there's potential to draw, you know, join these events so that you can keep up to date what's going on in research.
I am a recipient of the RSN news, and I do circulate it to the full membership.
Great.
As when I receive it.
Fantastic.
So they may not be members themselves, but they do get the gen.
Excellent, So also, there's on our website, there is a thing called the Take Part Hub. So this is where you can put your postcode in, and it will tell you all of the different initiatives that are happening in your area. So whether it's clinical trials or whether it's researchers looking for you to actually fill out questionnaires, often they want to understand how Parkinson's affects people before they go on and do a research project. So there's lots of opportunities to fill out questionnaires, have your perspective about, you know, how Parkinson's is affecting you, what drugs you would like to see developed. And also, more and more now, we're actually testing technologies. So there's opportunities there to test technologies, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. So there's lots of opportunities for people to actually actively take part in research. So what do we fund? So next page gives you a little bit of a summary about the different approaches we're taking to funding research. So one of our main, sort of what I call the backbone of our funding programs, is what we call project grants. So this year we funded almost about 1.5 million of project grants. That was six project grants, so quite chunky grants. So these look into what we call basic science, so what causes Parkinson's. So some of them are looking to develop new drugs, so they're the early stages of drug development. And so those sort of drug development stages go all the way up right into the early clinical phases. So our virtual biotech program, which I'll talk about as well, that really funds the clinical studies. So that's the sort of backbone of the thing. So 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago now, we also started a specific grant scheme for non-drug approaches. So what we're realizing now is that there are technologies which can, you know, have a, you know, game-changing influence on people's wellness that are technology-based. So I'll give you an example. Drooling is a big unmet need in Parkinson's. You know, people don't want to go out because if they're drooling, it's very embarrassing. And it's not because people with Parkinson's produce more saliva. It's that they don't swallow as frequently. And so we funded a study called Q-Band. So it's basically like a wristwatch, but it also sends a little cueing message to you. So while you're sitting there, you know, with your friends at the dinner table, or you're listening to me talking in the room now, it will actually send you a cueing message to say, swallow, swallow. And so this is a £27 device. It's gone into over 200 people at the moment, so we want to get that up to 300. So if you know anybody who experiences drooling, there's been lots of positive messages about the results so far, but we don't know the full results until we've probably tested it in about 300 people. So, you know, there are drugs to treat drooling, but they tend to dry up the saliva, make swallowing of tablets very difficult. So if we can get this £27 device accepted into the NHS, you know, it'll be prescribed. So technologies, you know, can have a real impact. So we're also paying for the development of a speech and language platform. Many people, you know, have benefited from speech and language, but in some areas it's difficult to get hold of a speech and language therapist. So we're developing a platform where you can deliver it. So somebody in the Outer Hebrides would have very difficult accessing speech and language. So we'll be able to spread, you know, speech and language therapy to more people across the whole UK with this platform. So here, technologies are really making a big change. And also, John here is going to be heading up a new initiative that we call Trusted Tech. So you've seen that there are lots of technologies on there on the internet. If you Google Parkinson's technologies, you'll get pages and pages and pages of different technologies of which the manufacturers are actually making a claim that it will, you know, cure your tremor, you know, these vibrating gloves or these other devices. But, you know, it's the Wild West out there. We don't know what devices are effective and which ones are just, you know, a gimmick. So Trusted Tech, we're just in the process of setting it up. We'll be looking for people to help us test these technologies. And so it will be reviewed by people with Parkinson's, and then we'll write a paper on it, and we'll publish it through blogs and through the RSN. And so we'll be able to say, yes, this technology, you know, this sleep app works. Or, you know, in 10 people that tested it, 8 people found that the sleep app actually improved their sleep. So you'll have some, you know, real-world evidence about these technologies and whether they're actually going to be helpful for you.
Will it only be those that have gone through clinical trials? I mean, for example, the Q1 has been purchased by quite a number of our members with very mixed success, and I mean, it costs 300 quid a go. So,
yes. Yes. That device is quite a unique one, because we did offer to run a clinical trial with Q1 so we would get some solid data. But they wanted to run the clinical trial in Israel. That started to ring warning bells, and really, I think it's in our name, Parkinson's UK, and we do have large populations of people with Parkinson's in the UK to test it. So, you know, when we said to them, yeah, we'll fund the trial, but you need to run it in the UK, we need to see it being used in the UK, and they declined to do it. So it does raise quite a lot of questions, but you know, we would be able to test this device and see whether it's beneficial to people. But we do have the grants program, the non-drug grants, where people are looking to make clinical claims, like say if it was to, you know, if they were saying it's going to abolish tremors, you know, we could actually have a device testing that was done in a clinical trial setting. But if it's a device where it's more for consumer use, sort of say it's an app for sleep, we can gather the real world evidence about it. So the platform will also allow you to say, if you've gone away and purchased that sleep app, you should then be able to add your reviews into the platform. So it will expand the number of people. So pretty much like a Trustpilot. So if you want to buy a new fridge, you know, you'll want to see on the website how many people have rated that this fridge, you know, does a good job of being a fridge and keeping your wine cool. So the other one is the Drug Accelerator Awards. So these are, we're funding sort of small, it's up to about 150,000. So these are where researchers, they can be academics in the UK, but also biotechs around the world. So this is where we can actually fill those gaps in their data sets. Because often we'll have people from a biotech come to us in the virtual biotech program and say, will you fund the development of this drug through your pipeline? And we don't, they haven't got all the data for you to make a business decision to say, yes, this is a potential drug here. So where there are gaps in their data, we can actually plug them with these Drug Accelerator Awards. So we have two rounds of that. We funded two projects earlier on this year, and so we'll probably fund another two or three projects later on this year as well. You know, the Brain Bank has been going since I set it up at Imperial College in 2002, and so it's a fantastic resource. And as I mentioned earlier on, you know, animals don't get Parkinson's. You know, you don't go down Kensington High Street and see a dog with a tremor and Parkinson's, or you don't drive up the M1 and see a Parkinson's cow. It's actually looking at the brains of people who have had Parkinson's that really reveal what's going wrong in the disease. It's like looking at the scene of a crime. And all of the discoveries that we've made so far have all come from donated brains. So it's really vital part, and it's something that everybody can actually do. So we've got, I think we've had getting on for about 1,700 donations to date. But unfortunately, the bit that goes wrong most in Parkinson's, which is the dopamine-producing cells, it's about the size of your thumbnail. So it's not very large. So if you've got 30 researchers after a bit of your thumbnail, it doesn't go very far. So we need to keep collecting more brains in order to keep sending tissue out to researchers. And the thing is as well that we need healthy, or what we call control people, to actually donate their brains as well. Because if a researcher requests tissue for a specific project, what they'll want is 20 cases who have Parkinson's and compare them to 20 cases who don't. So they've got a reference point. And for every 10 Parkinson's brains that we collect, we only collect 2 healthy brains. So in effect, they're holding up the research more than what people with Parkinson's are. So if you know healthy volunteers, particularly who are in their sort of 60s, 70s, 80s, who would be interested in becoming a brain donor, it's a very simple process. So unfortunately, your kidney donor, like NHS card, doesn't cover brain donation. So we have to have a specific donation program. So people sign up to be a brain donor, you're given a dedicated card. So other family members can carry a spare copy of that card. And then obviously, once somebody's died, then we kick into a process about collecting that brain, because we need to collect it fairly quickly after somebody's died.
So you approach this via the website?
Yes. So if you look on Parkinson's UK website about the Brain Bank, it will actually link you to the donation page, or you can go to, if you Google Parkinson's UK Brain Bank Imperial, it will take you directly to the Brain Bank's webpage as well. And so there are links on there where you can download the donation forms.
How does the Parkinson's UK Brain Bank, how is that related to Queen Square, who are also asking for brains?
Yeah, so the Queen Square Brain Bank they not only collect Parkinson's, but they collect a wide range of disorders. So they're a smaller bank, and they don't operate UK-wide, whereas Parkinson's UK one, we operate Scotland, Ireland, Northern Ireland, Wales, the rest of the UK, and things. We've even collected brains from the Channel Islands before. So Queen Square is more local within the London area, but for us, we do operate UK-wide. So it's a jointly funded facility because the MS Brain Bank, Multiple Sclerosis Brain Bank, is there as well. So they are starting to open up and have tours again. So they're a little bit short-staffed at the moment, but if you want to arrange tours, going to next year, it's a fantastic facility to look around. You can see a donated brain being dissected, and you can actually see the bits that go wrong in Parkinson's with your naked eye, because those dopamine cells that are in your size of your thumbnail, they have a black pigment in them. So in a healthy brain, you can see a nice line of darkly pigmented cells. And in a Parkinson's brain, you can see with the naked eye that you lose that black pigmented cells. So Steve, gentleman, who's the neuropathologist there, does a dissection, explains to people, which of the brain areas that go wrong. So there is going to be a large project that's going to be launched. It's probably going to have its formal launch now, probably in January, February next year. So the actual title of the project and who is actually involved is a bit confidential at the moment. So we're just getting the people to sign the contracts before we can make the announcement. But this is going to be a major £8 million investment into analysing the samples. And so these samples, are fairly unique. We've collected a large range of samples. And really, it's going to revolutionise the way that we look at Parkinson's. And here, in the sheets, we've called it Mapping the Brain. But really, what we're going to do with this project is not only look at the genetics of Parkinson's, but we're also going to look at the proteins that's involved, the lipids that's involved in the metabolites. It's called a multi-omics study. And this is really going to really find out what are the true causes of Parkinson's so that we can develop better drugs for them. It will also investigate why some people develop dementia or memory problems and other people don't with Parkinson's. And also, you know, the dopamine cells in the brain, there are multiple pathways that use dopamine as a neurotransmitter, but they don't degenerate. So what we'll also be looking at is finding out why this dopamine pathway that causes Parkinson's, why is it susceptible to dying compared to the other dopamine pathways in the brain that are fairly resistant. So this whole program will really revolutionise the way that we look at Parkinson's, give us a unique understanding, and it will also allow us to really focus some, you know, concentrated efforts on, you know, drug discovery. So this will, we've got a number of pharmaceutical companies who are putting in money into this investment as well. So we've got a very large, foundation that's putting in about $4 million as well. We believe that this project will actually lead to a significant advancement there. So it'll be about £8 million of research, and it will be everybody working together. So whether it's from Parkinson's UK, Imperial College will lead the project with the Brain Bank, and also the pharmaceutical companies, who are in the end going to be the ones that will actually, you know, do quite a lot of the drug development and actually get them into your clinicians' hands. So this, they're keen on it because it will allow them to actually identify more accurately the drugs that we should be developing, rather than waiting to phase two and phase three. When the drug fails, that is a very long process. It costs about £2 billion to get to there, and it takes a long time. And so those failures really are not good news, and it indicates that we're not making the right decisions. So this project will allow us to make the right decisions, to test the right drugs, and so there'll be less chance of failure. So overall, this project, using the Brain Bank samples, will really revolutionise what we know about Parkinson's and how we're going to treat it. So the other thing is worth talking about is exercise. It's the only thing that's clinically shown to actually slow Parkinson's. So it's not only humans with Parkinson's. If you have animal models of Parkinson's, you know, mice like to run in their wheels. So if you have a mouse model of Parkinson's, you have 50% of the mice in cages where their exercise wheels are freely moving, and 50% of the mice are in cages where you've locked the exercise wheel. And if you compare the amount of bad proteins that is deposited in the brains of those mice, in the ones that don't exercise, they have more bad proteins that are being deposited in their brains. So, you know, there's a lot of growing evidence now that exercise, you know, is really beneficial for people with Parkinson's. So we've got a whole host of different activity programs that we're funding. You know, there's a lot more money being made available by the charity. You know, talking to John the other day, it's clearly that you're a very active grant, you know, a very active branch, looking at very different, you know, ways of exercising and keeping people sort of mobile. You know, there's a recent study showing that Tai Chi, again, improving, you know, balance and things, but also, you know, potentially slowing down Parkinson's. So there's lots of growing evidence about exercise. So I've probably taken up enough time, but hopefully, you know, giving you a positive message about that there is a lot going on in research. There are new drugs coming through the system that need testing. And people with Parkinson's can have a major role in actually shaping research. You know, we involve people with Parkinson's on every decision panel making that we do. So they sit on our, obviously, board of trustees, but they sit on our research strategy board. They help us review our grants. So if you're ever interested in, you know, playing an active role in helping us review grants, because, you know, it not only needs to be good science that we fund, it needs to be that it's important for you as people with Parkinson's that it's good research for those as well. So, you know, we're constantly looking for people who are willing to help us review grants as what we call lay reviewers. So also we have volunteers who go and work with companies. You know, if they're going to design a trial, it needs to be fit for people with Parkinson's to do. And so you can have a valuable input in actually making sure that that trial is fit for purpose. Then it's got less risk of failing. So there's lots of different ways in people can also volunteer in the research sector for the charity.
Well, amazing, eh? By pledging your brain to Parkinson's research, you can help find a cure to transform the lives of 153,000 people living with Parkinson's in the UK. So, if you'd like to find out more about leaving your brain to research, you might need to pause this and get a pen because the website bit is very long. Please go to www.parkinsons.org.uk/research/Parkinson's-UK-brain-bank. And thank you for listening. Do let me know who you'd like to hear from and the questions that are important to you. You can email me at plifecraft@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you. In the meantime, goodbye and take good care of yourselves. In producing this podcast, I'd like to thank Richard Smart and Emma Brzezinski for the idea, our chairman John Amphlett, who always encourages an idea, Nick F. Gray for the original music, Mike Bailey and the team at EPLS Design for the graphics and sound editing. This is a production by Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group with permission from Parkinson's UK.
Please note that unless otherwise stated, the people speaking in this podcast are not experts. They are describing their personal experience of Parkinson's disease and ways they have personally found helpful in dealing with it. You must consult your own medical advisors before acting on any suggestions made in this podcast. This applies to experts as well as non-experts. Nothing in this podcast is to be treated as advice, and no liability whatsoever is accepted by the makers or participants for any steps taken in reliance on any part of its contents.